We have some events in the world today that call to our attention certain things we have tried to learn and are still trying to learn, and I think it would be well at this moment to review them, particularly in light of the present chapter, which is 17, the study of the world consciousness. We had this event on Friday when the boys from Wichita State, flying over to Salt Lake City or Logan, Utah, had a disaster over the Colorado Rockies. Plane exploded. 13 boys on the football team were killed. The coach, the athletic director. Actually, there were 29 people in a plane who were killed and 11 survived. And if any of us had been parents of those boys, at the moment we'd be in a state of mourning. Now, Wichita State is in the middle of what may be called the Bible Belt. And a very strange thing happens when something like this happens in a family. Faith in God isn't shaken, but instead, we tend to turn to God and say, I don't really understand this, but I hope that you're taking care of my boy now, up in heaven. You know, when 6 million Jews were burned in the ovens of Hitler, the Jewish religion didn't look at God and say, well, now, what's wrong with our concept of God? It just goes right on worshiping the same God. The God who did nothing about 6 million people killed. And so it is with all of the religions of our world. We go right on today just as if God is doing the right thing by us, we hope. And it never occurs to us that by challenging our own concept of God, we're not being unfaithful to God. We're removing our insult to God. Now let's look up close at that wreckage in the Colorado Rockies. The plane went through the sky. Our religion believes that God created the sky. The next logical question would be then, if God created the sky, why doesn't God maintain an orderly route through the sky, protected under divine government by everything that goes through God's sky? And of course, there's no possible answer to that from the standpoint of the human mind. And then we say to ourselves, did God know about this wreck before it happened? And we have to say, obviously not, because if God knew about it before it happened, well, certainly God would have alerted everybody and prevented it. And the fact that it wasn't prevented by God would indicate that God didn't know about it before it happened. Well, we'd like to know exactly when God did learn about that wreckage. Was there a moment in which God became aware of it? There was a moment when the engines didn't work. The pilot was aware of it. Was God aware of it yet? Well, God didn't do anything about it at that moment, so we'd have to say, at that moment, the pilot knew about it, but not God. The pilot at that moment knew something God didn't know. He knew his engines weren't working right, but God didn't know that. Then there was some black smoke came out of it. And finally, the plane was not able to continue, and the pilot was diving to the earth. And we want to know if God knew about it at that time. Because certainly if God knew about it at that time, wouldn't God prepare a perfect place for the plane to land? But it seems that God must not have known about it because the plane hit the mountain. And then it burst into flame. Then it exploded. Before you knew it, there were 11 survivors walking out, dazed, confused, burned, and there were 29 charred bodies, including 13 members of the Wichita University State University football team, of which we might say one of our boys was in that plane, one of our sons. Now let's take that boy, or 13 of them. They were under very rigid football discipline, so you know they weren't degenerates. You know they weren't drinking alcohol. You know they weren't smoking. They were probably drinking milk at night, going to bed early. They were doing what a nice, normal, healthy, wholesome, Bible-loving son would do. But they're not alive. And we still wonder, when did God become aware of that event? The photographers became aware of it. The press became aware of it. The mothers and fathers became aware of it. And has God yet been aware and alerted to the fact that it happened? Now, there's no indication that God knows any of this or knew any of this as it happened or before it happened. But the world knows about it. Every newspaper in the country knows about it. And there's great mourning and great grief. Because we know it happened. But God does not know it happened. The usual questions are, who was responsible? Was it the pilot? Was it the owner of the chartered plane? Was the equipment faulty? Hadn't it been checked properly by the ground crew? Did the pilot know anything about navigation? Was he licensed? So forth. But those are the wrong questions. Those are the questions that have been asked again and again and again after every fatal crash. The question we want to ask is this. How do we know it happened and God doesn't know it happened? How do we know more than God? By what earthly intelligence are we able to know that which God is unable to know? Because there's no evidence that God knows anything about that wreck or the death of 29 people. When you ask that question of yourself, you can begin to see what the message of truth has been trying to tell you for the past 100 years on this earth. There wasn't anyone in that plane who was aware of the presence of God. And yet all may have been lovers of the Bible, believers in God, ever since they were knee-high to a grasshopper. They may have been weaned on religious beliefs, but those beliefs were powerless. And if there had been a minister or a priest or a rabbi sitting on the plane with them, it would have been of no avail. If all of Kansas had known about it and had prayed, it would have been of no avail. And so the question isn't what went wrong. Was the equipment faulty? The question is, how do we attain oneness with God? For surely our normal human concepts in this world of God are faulty. Not our equipment, our ignorance of God is the cause of every problem that we face. Now we're told that one with God is a majority, and we're also then to accept the fact that one with God on that plane, conscious of the presence of God, not of a concept called God, but of the living presence of God, would have made it impossible for the crash. Now we could go back to our normal routines. It was just an item in the newspapers to us. But you see, tomorrow it's our son or our grandson at his college, and it takes off for another game somewhere else. Or tomorrow it's us on a plane traveling somewhere else, and it's also us in an automobile. It's always the question of whether or not we are moving in the world of men, not in the government of God, or moving in the kingdom of God under divine protection. Now suppose you had been able to train one of those boys in the truth. Suppose you had been able to teach him that when you are not conscious of the presence of God, that presence cannot function through your consciousness, and therefore you are unprotected by the very God you worship. Your consciousness is the channel through which God comes into your experience. And when you're not conscious of God, because God is life, when you are not conscious of God, you are unconscious. You are moving in unreality. You are dead to God. And it's only a matter of time before that catches up with you to prove that you've been dead to God. It may not happen in a crash, it just happens normally. We who are dead to God die, because whatever is in your consciousness must externalize. We who are alive to God live. And so we find that we are here to build a consciousness not of death, not of mortality, but a consciousness of those qualities which are eternal. Whenever your consciousness contains an awareness of the eternal, that is what you will show forth. You will show forth your consciousness of the eternal as an eternal experience. Or you will show forth your consciousness of mortality as a mortal experience. And just now, coming over the horizon, is the understanding that we are here to build our consciousness of God's presence at all times. Not even 23 hours a day, but 24, must we be aware without ceasing that where we are, God is. We were given that in the first commandment. Acknowledge me. Honor the Lord supremely. Acknowledge me with all thine heart, thy soul, and thy mind. And we were given that because the minute you acknowledge the presence of God, that presence acknowledges you. It cannot function through your unconsciousness of its presence. And without it, without our awareness of its presence, we walk separated from it, divided, forced into a separation through ignorance. And the entire world is walking in that separation, separated from the presence of God by unawareness of that presence, being unconscious to it. And we are privileged through this study to make an adjustment in consciousness which takes away the division, the separation, and brings us into divine government by our unceasing awareness that where I stand, God is now. Never can there be a change in that truth. But your conscious awareness of it is what brings it into active experience. Now the 17th chapter of John, the revelation here, is all about the world which is unconscious of the presence of God. And it gives us the reason why we are unconscious of the presence of God. If you look around your world today, you will see that science in the main is atheism. There are those scientists who believe in a God, it's true, but basically the majority of the scientific world believes God has no existence. And so we can't look to science to help us find the presence of God. Then when we look to the religious world, we find it is unconscious of the presence of God while it believes it worships God. And so it cannot demonstrate God. It cannot bring God into experience. It is always praying, seeking God's help to do something. Or it is praying while it is burying a corpse after the death. Religion cannot give us God because it has not found God. It has not got out of the trap of the belief in mortality. Science has not risen out of the trap in the belief in mortality. All around you, the people you love, the people you respect, the people you wish to help, are anchored in the belief that we are mortal beings. And there is no way that you can help them other than demonstrating through your awareness of the presence of God that you are not a mortal being. For your words will not help them. Your promises will not help them. Nothing you do can help them if you leave them in the belief that they are mortal beings. Because you can be sure that the only reason 29 in a plane die is because they believe they are mortal beings. And in doing so, they are separated from the immortal presence, which is the only presence. So we who wish to be a boon to those around us, to express our love, we must go about it a different way than the world has gone about it in the past. We hear about people doing all wonderful things, all kinds of deeds that are fine on the human scene. But they are still leaving those whom they love in the belief that mortality is the nature of man. They are still leaving them subject to two powers, to a divided consciousness which is unprotected against the false powers of the world. Your only way of help then is to walk in your immortal self, which walks on earth now in the kingdom of God knowingly, without ceasing. We must drop the belief in mortality, in materiality. This is the new consciousness that is dawning in us. And now in the 17th chapter, we find that even though love of the world has been shown by John in his early letters to be the cause of every problem on this earth, even though Jesus taught that matter and mortality were the false beliefs of a human mind, even though this Bible has been in existence since the 5th century, even though it has been printed since the 14th century, even though there are millions of Bibles all over the world, the basic teaching of the Bible is unheeded completely. And that is, God is all and God is spirit. Unless there is a consciousness that I am spirit, I have not caught the message of the Bible. And I can step on a plane tomorrow without divine protection. But let me know that spirit is my name, wherever I am. And I am under the perfect law of God. To the degree that I do not drop my awareness that spirit is my name, to that degree do I walk in the kingdom of God on earth. Deny it. Voluntarily or involuntarily, knowingly or unknowingly, and you step out of the kingdom of God, walking defenseless in the midst of non-existent powers that can actually kill you. Now John sees an angel, one of the angels with the seven vials. The angel says, "Come hither. I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters." Now, the use of this term is to dramatize that the human mind has been seduced from reality. The great whore that sitteth upon many waters. Mortality. The belief in mortality throughout the Old and the New Testament is called a harlot, because through the belief in mortality we are unfaithful to God. God is immortal. By our belief in immortality, we are unfaithful to our own identity. We are deceived. We accept mortality, where the only creator is the immortal self, the only life is the immortal life, and we walk in a sense of mortal being. So we are seduced by the harlot, who invites us to live a mortal life, and we in our ignorance accept. She sitteth upon many waters, and this refers to the many levels of human consciousness which all accept mortality as the reality of life. This is the widespread, accepted, normal belief of man on earth. But John says, no, you've missed the teaching if you believe that. Jesus taught us to be reborn out of the mortal belief into the realization of immortal sonship, which is the permanent state of being in which we have ever been before the foundations of the world, now and forever, hypnotized by the senses. It isn't enough for a mortal being to say, I believe in God. That mortal being must say, because I believe in God, who is the immortal self, the only creator, I also believe that I am not mortal being, but immortal being. I believe that the substance of God is my substance. I believe that God being spirit, I am spirit. I believe that God being perfect, I am perfect. No longer will I insult God by believing that the immortal spirit can create an imperfect mortal being. Yes, I believe in God, but I also believe that I am God's divine image and likeness, which is not mortal, which cannot die, which cannot suffer, which cannot be charred on a mountainside when a plane bursts into flame. My name is I Am, the Spirit of God. And therefore this form you see, which is mortal, cannot be my identity. It must be something else, and I must find out what it is. I must come out from under the belief of centuries that this mortal body is me. For unless I do, I am accepting myself to be something that God did not create. The God that did not save 13 boys on a hillside did not create those 13 boys. Now let's go back to Thunder of Silence. Let's look at something you have studied and see how well you assimilated it. There is no truth in this whole picture because we are living in a spiritual universe where nobody has any need of baggage. You remember, he lost his baggage, but now he learns nobody has need of baggage in a spiritual universe. Whatever there is of reality is incorporeal, spiritual, omnipresent, and whatever appears as finite baggage in time, in space, must be an image in thought. So now he's telling us that whatever we see as mortal flesh, just as whatever we see of finite baggage, is an image in thought. And we're going to stay with this until we know what that means. It can have no reality to it. And so he concluded, I have been fooled into hoping and waiting for material baggage to turn up in a spiritual universe where every idea is omnipresent. Now this is rather difficult to understand. But the next sentence is not difficult to understand, and it is this. There is no such thing as a material body. There's only a material concept of body. Now here you are, and your son has just been killed on a Colorado mountainside, and you're being told there is only a material concept of body. It doesn't sit very well with you. Nevertheless, even though it's sour in the belly, God did not create that which can die. And so we have to change our concept of our son, our concept of our own body, and see the difference between a body and a concept of body. Your body is a temple of the living God. It cannot die on a hillside. Then it cannot be this body. But what is this body? Let us finally understand what this body is. This body is your consciousness made visible. Your consciousness is simply not conscious of your true body. Your consciousness is looking at your true body, your spiritual body, but it cannot receive the fullness of your spiritual body inside its consciousness, because your consciousness is finite. And so outside your consciousness is the fullness of your body, and inside your consciousness is your limited concept of that body. That limited concept inside your consciousness is the body you walk around in. Your physical body is within your consciousness. It is not outside it, it is within it. And if your consciousness could expand and expand and expand to receive a wider, more truer understanding of your spiritual body, that realization would then change your physical form to that extent. Meanwhile, until you can do that, your spiritual form is unrecognized by your consciousness, and your limited awareness of that spiritual form within your consciousness is converted into a concept called physical body. Between your physical body, which is finite and mortal, and your spiritual body, which is infinite and immortal, is that line of your consciousness. And to the capacity that you can receive the truth of your being, to that degree do you manifest this form. Later you will manifest a spiritual form when your consciousness is spiritual. And so we're in the division between spirit and matter because our consciousness is a material consciousness. And that's how we get a material sense of body. We do not have a material body. We have a material sense of body. And the bodies you see are within the consciousness of each individual walking where your eye reports a form. There goes a form, but it is a form in somebody's consciousness which you are accepting as a form. If that individual's consciousness was spirit, that form would not be there that way, but instead a body of light would appear there. Always the converter is the consciousness, and the density of that consciousness makes the density of the form. Your body is formed of a fabric, and that fabric is your consciousness. When your consciousness is a spiritual consciousness, then the fabric of your body will be spirit. When your consciousness is mental, then the fabric of your body is the mental fabric, which appears as matter. Now this is the hypnotism then of mind. And so we see forms, we see baggage. But always, God is the only substance, the only presence. And God presence is spirit, which we are discerning through the density of our consciousness. Now get that that the bodies you see are not there. They are only in your consciousness. They are images in your thought. What is there is pure spiritual emanation, unseen by and untouched by the limitation of your finite consciousness. And so we're told to develop this consciousness through truth and meditation, to spiritualize it, to refine it, to uplift it, to make it conscious of Christ. There's no such thing as a material body. There's only a material concept of body. And there is no such thing as a material universe. You'll find this all on page 102 and 103 of Thunder of Silence. There is only a material concept of the one spiritual universe. And as long as we accept these material concepts of the spiritual universe, we're under the laws of matter. And so we get in a plane as a material concept called body, and we're under the law of matter. But we could get in a plane in a different way. We could get in a plane knowing that this material concept that you see does not change the fact that only spirit is my name and my substance. And therefore, I can now rest in the knowledge that being spirit, I am under the government of the divine consciousness. That the only power in my life is divine consciousness, which governs its own spirit. Now I am opening myself to a new law, a new level. I am not mortal being in a mortal body. I am spiritual being in a divine body, under the law of divine consciousness. And what brings that law into work now? The first commandment. Acknowledge me. Acknowledge me. I am divine consciousness, the Father. That wasn't so difficult to acknowledge me, was it? Now that you've acknowledged me, we are one consciousness. Your consciousness, aware of my consciousness, makes you one with my consciousness. And now the Father and the Son are one. Acknowledge me in all thy ways, without ceasing, with your mind, your soul, your heart. Never stop acknowledging that I, divine consciousness, am the Father of this universe. I am present wherever anyone is. Don't step into an automobile. Step into divine consciousness as you step into an automobile. Don't step into an airplane. Step into divine consciousness. Don't step into bed. Step into divine consciousness. Don't step out of bed. Step out into divine consciousness without ceasing. And that means where you are, acknowledge that God is there. God is divine consciousness. Right here in this room, God is. Divine consciousness is here. And therefore, divine consciousness being here is governing here. And your awareness of that enables divine consciousness to come through your awareness. If you're not conscious of something, it's outside your awareness. How can you be aware of it if it's outside your awareness? And so you must consciously be aware. And the minute you do that, you are praying. And that's the only prayer you ever need know. For that is the Lord's Prayer. God is here, now, being God. and all the appearances of the world will testify no, but God is here being God. It will not change, and the one who is conscious of it is under the law of that presence. It makes no difference what you're suffering from. The moment you know God is where you are, even though your five senses are on fire and denying God, your acceptance of God's presence, even in the face of what your five senses are saying, this is the acknowledgement and the only acknowledgement that is necessary. God is here. God does not inhabit a place where a virus can exist. Can God be here and a virus? What kind of power has God? Can God be here and a problem? Can God be here and anything but God? The moment you know God is here, you know the opposite. Whatever is not God is not here, because God is all. And this is the consciousness you build day in and day out until it's automatic, until you don't have to say it. You don't even have to think it. It's your normal consciousness. God is here. Where? The world sees you here, but God is here. Why is God there? Because there's no place where God is not. Well, what about you? If God is there, what about you? If God is there, then God is the substance of all that you are. And all that is not the substance of God is not there, though it appears to be. It is a concept in consciousness. God is not your mortal body, but God is where you are. And when you accept your mortal body as reality, you are denying the presence of God. This is the hurdle that you face. The moment you accept your mortal body as being present, you have imagined a form that is not there. God is there. And God is not your mortal form, and God is all. And therefore, without the capacity to fully understand that, to know that, you still must, on faith, accept it. Because God is here, and God is not this form. God being all, this form cannot be here. Where is it? It's in my consciousness. That's the only place that exists. And as that consciousness becomes Christ consciousness, then I will find and live in, knowingly, the Christ form. Now that's the transition in consciousness we're all going through. The actual denial of the human form, of all material form, the good and the bad. For this is the harlot that seduces us into a false sense of life. This is the harlot that sitteth upon many levels of human consciousness, all accepting the mortal form as themselves, and all dying in that mortal form. We have all passed this, and then we have come to a place where we thought we might have understood it, and then we have ignored it, and then we have returned to it. Always we're hoping in some way that we can live in the best of two worlds, trying to live in the kingdom and also trying to live in the best of this world, clinging to our mortal beliefs. But you find ultimately you cannot live in the best of two worlds, because only one is here. and it is not this one. All that you call a mortal world is in your mortal consciousness. The complete mortal experience is nothing more than the mortal consciousness made visible. And God is divine consciousness, immortal consciousness, the only consciousness. And so the death of the mortal consciousness is the rebirth into the immortal consciousness. All that is contained in the mortal consciousness must be abandoned and is abandoned as the mortal consciousness dies to the Father. As we put on the garment of the immortal consciousness, then it externalizes and we are no longer walking in bodies of clay. We are walking in the awareness of a spiritual form, even though the world only sees a body of clay. And we are no longer deceived by the harlot who sitteth upon many waters. This is probably the hardest thing there is in the Bible, and yet it's the very core of it. Joel goes on to say, we learn that we begin to understand that we live and move and have our being in the first chapter of Genesis, where man is made in the divine image and likeness of God, of spirit, that the soul of God is the soul of man, the life of God is the life of man, and the mind of God is the mind of man, and the body of God is the body of man. Nothing occupies time or space but our mental images. So whatever your name or nature, if you exist in time or in space, you are a mental image, a nothingness. And these are the facts. And it is not enough to read them or even to understand them. They must be lived with until it's not Joel's consciousness saying them anymore, but your own. Now, this is the consciousness we're all trying to build. The consciousness of the pure, perfect, omnipresent Spirit of God everywhere. Starting with right here, where I stand. And then right there where you stand. And right there where she stands. And right there where everyone else stands. Until in your consciousness, spirit stands everywhere, in spite of the mental images that appear external to your form. That's the way to freedom. Come hither, said the angel to John. I will show you the judgment of the great whore. Now, the judgment means that having accepted mortality as what we are, we accept death. We accept death as a normal thing because mortality accepts things to be dying. And so we accept that we live in dying bodies. We accept that we live in a dying life. We accept that all of the material structures that we know ultimately must die with us. This becomes part of the pattern of our minds. Death is an accepted thing with us. We believe in mortality. And we live out of that belief. We seek to postpone it as long as possible. We're conscious of it. And God never created mortality. and yet we say we worship God. The judgment of mortality is that everything that is born must die. And this is the pattern that is perpetuated. Now, John has much more to say about mortality. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. We have invented a whole pattern of powers called the kings of the earth. All of these things have power. Money has power. Position has power. Material possessions have power. Bombs have power. Disease has power. These are the kings of the earth. They have drunk the wine of her fornication. They only have power because we believe in mortality. Mortality being our belief, those things which threaten our lives are accepted as powers. Those kings of the earth which have power over us are the false powers born of the false belief that I walk in a mortal form. My body being mortal, anything that threatens my body is a power over me. Out of the false belief called the fornication come all of the false powers that I must fear and run from and defend against. Powers that only exist because of my primary illusion that I am mortal being. Stand ye still in your immortal self and behold the salvation of the Lord. There are no kings of the earth over you. There are no false powers. There's nothing threatens your mortality because you have none. Nothing threatens immortality. We are being deceived by the universal belief that mortality is a reality. And so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Now John is lifted higher in spirit into the wilderness, and that means he is lifted out of world thought, world hypnotism. 40 days in the wilderness, out of world hypnotism. And out of world hypnotism, he can see the eternal, the immortal realities. He can see what is. And by seeing what is, he automatically knows what is not. There he sees this woman sitting upon a scarlet-covered beast. The harlot, mortality, sits upon a beast. You see, mortality rides on the beast. Mortality rides on the belief in matter. The belief in matter is the beast. Believing in matter, which is mortal, we believe that we are mortal. And so the beast we ride upon is materialism. And from it, we are deluded into the belief that we are mortal matter. Full of names of blasphemy, because every belief we have in our mortal material self is a blasphemy, an untruth about reality. How can mortal matter know God? How can mortal matter be protected by God? or live in the law of God, or walk in the kingdom of God. And so by the very belief that we are mortal matter, we are Adam and Eve stepping outside of Eden. We have succumbed to the wiles of the harlot. And from that moment on, whatever we think or do is blasphemy. For we accept the seven heads and the ten horns of the beast, which are the false powers of the beast. The woman was arrayed in purple, scarlet colors. She was decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hands full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. You see, to mortal matter, the woman called mortality is a very desirable thing. She's ravishing to mortal matter. Her raiment is beautiful and enticing. And she has all these precious stones. These represent the false lures of mortal mind. She has a golden goblet. And we reach in for these things. They turn out to be filth and abominations, meaning mortality has nothing to offer except deception. It has fooled the world. Mortality can only offer death. It can only offer an end. It can only offer false promises. And as you reach for them, even in the fulfillment of them, death is still waiting around the corner. Mortality is the lie about God, the supreme lie about God.